It's, we've replaced you, Ian. Sorry. You've been replaced with Banky's dog.
Yeah, Ian's been replaced by the dog. Welcome to GCP Bytes, episode number 20 for Friday, the 4th of July, 2025. GCP Bytes is a podcast where we discuss Google Cloud and tech. And I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, Google Cloud is gaining ground. Is the Pixel phone getting banned? What's Broadcom up to? Plus, Gemini gets some really cool new features, and I've already used one, I'll tell you what. But before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-host of the show, Dave Wall. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing great. Thanks, mate. I'm staring at my Pixel on the bench here, and I'm like, oh, no, they'll take it from my cold, dead hands.
It's going to get banned. And as you may have already figured out, we have no Ian today.
No, where is he? No. I'm looking around. He's out in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, he's off living his best life, caravanning around outback Queensland. So, yeah, I saw a couple of photos.
He sent us a lovely photo from Birdsville Hotel.
He did. yeah, pretty slow network coverage out there, but you can get a message through and a few pictures through. It's not a problem.
He's got his Starlink.
True. I do remember doing the Simpson Desert. It's like back in 2018, something like that. And, of course, when you cross from west to east and you end up in Birdsville. When we all went to the Birdsville Hotel, turned our phones on for the first time in 5 days. And, we got mobile phone reception, but there was no Starlink then, right? And everyone's phone was just like running bling, flat out. But because they, I was complaining, oh, my phone's really hot and running really slow. And then my mate said, yeah, so's mine, because they're all pumping out to the base station. Yeah. And, of course, all the phones, and we had a group of about 15 people, they're all hitting the base station, which doesn't have much bandwidth to start with. And, it took about 20 minutes for it to catch up. So
yeah, right. Oh, I mean, it sort of takes me back. I mean, it's been a minute, but, you know, like going to, music festivals and things like that, and it's just way too many people, and you can't even say, get like a text through to your friend to be like, you know, meet me at the coat check or something.
Yeah, that's right. Like, yeah.
Nope, there's 50,000 people here. Phones don't work.
Phones don't work that well. Yeah. So, yeah, that was exactly what happened. But no, you don't have that problem with Starlink, I guess. It's yours.
Yeah. Telstra works better out there than in the suburbs. So,
well, yeah. I mean, Telstra have just sent me a message saying you've got the direct texting to satellites now on supported handsets if you're in regional areas. Yeah. So next time I'm out the bush, I'll definitely be trying that out, because I don't have Starlink. But if I can text directly to satellites, wow, that's incredible.
That'd be good. Did you see if the Pixels are on that list? Or is it just because I recall it wasn't Telstra really only testing on iPhones initially?
Oh, right. Okay.
I think we covered that as a
We article. Did. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm personally thinking about shifting phone providers, because just where my house is, even with, so I'm with Vodafone, and even though they've just recently signed a deal where them and Optus are sharing towers, it's bad at my house. It's like I can't use my phone in the office. If I have to take a call, I have to kind of walk to the other side of the house.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. I just found the article that we used as to cover the story, and it still had my highlights in it, because that's what that's what the app does. It said it wouldn't be available till 2027, but yeah, there's a blog article on Telstra's website saying that it's available now. So yeah, it connects automatically.
Oh, well, you're gonna have to test it out. Yeah.
So yeah, it's limited handsets: iPhone 16, 15, 14, 13, and Samsung S25.
Oh. No Pixel.
No Pixel.
On your contraband Pixel phone. Yeah. Can't do it.
We'll get to that. let's hope that the radio on the next model Pixel supports it. That'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. And what's news with you, mate? What's going
well,
on?
Look, I want to talk about the concept of enshittification for a little bit. This is today's rant. So,
all right, this is your jeers, right? We got a jeers from Banky.
That's right. So if you're not familiar with this concept or this meme that's, an internet-driven idea, it's when you have a product or it might be an open source thing or a free thing or a cheap thing or a company's got a thing that's got a home version or an enterprise version and it gets bought by a bigger company. We can see plenty of examples of that happening, right?
Yeah, or any private equity firm.
Private equity firm or anything like that, yeah. And then it slowly gets eroded away and driven into the ground and then eventually everyone just moves away from it and it either just disappears into a hole or just fails completely because they try to make a buck off it and it just fails. I watched a couple of videos recently and this is exactly what happened with companies like Dick Smith, right? A few open source projects this has happened. Well, I've actually been caught in the middle of this. I use Untangle. I've used it for years I really like it. There was a home license you could use for $50 for 3 years or something like that.
And Untangle was a software router, right? And it's router distribution.
A software, all-in-one software router, firewall, scanner, IDS scanner, intrusion prevention. It's got it all in there. And the way it works is you have it shows you like a rack of plugins and you turn the rack, turn the plugins on and off and sort of build the rack up. Now, the idea sort of untangle, right? Instead of having all these boxes to run your network, you do it all in one, right? That's kind of where it came from. DHCP server, DNS, all that as well. Great. I had the home license, which enabled anything, the virus scanner enabled like cloud backups, remote cloud login, all that stuff was enabled as well. Used it many times to connect back home and get myself out of a bind with different things. Well, the thing's so reliable, I rarely log onto it. I rarely log onto the GUI at home. And I logged on there the other day and all my apps are disabled because I've got all the premium apps installed. What's going on here? And sure enough, went and checked on my account and I'm back to the basic free account. What's going on? Turns out that Arista, who bought Untangle probably 3, maybe 4 years ago now, have removed the home license and they're only making it available to enterprise at like $600 or $700 a year.
It's a little more than what you were paying.
Oh, I'm not paying that. Are you kidding me? So it had been all disabled. I don't know how. Well, my license had expired. I was expecting a renewal, I think sometime around February it should have happened. So I'd been sitting there for like 4 months in free mode with like, there is a virus scanner, but I'd had the premium virus scanner installed, which had disabled itself. So I've had to remove that and put the virus scanner light back on. And I've had to remove all those premium features like backups and logging and all the rest of it. I'm going to get rid of Untangle. I'm not really happy about that.
A plan on what you're going to shift to? You're going to go over to like pfSense or OpenSense?
So I'm looking at both of those options, pfSense, OpenSense. I've already moved the DNS across to Pi-hole at this point. That's running on my network at the moment. That's good. I have to say, like, it gives you, if you like your stats, if you like your numbers, check out Pi-hole.
Yeah, the only issue I ever had with Pi-hole was, I mean, at least the last time I went to use it, there wasn't really a good kind of HA methodology for it. You could have two Pi-hole servers, but you couldn't link stats between them.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that was because I caught myself out once where I was like, I think I was rebooting my NAS, which was running Pi-hole, and then I lost all the name resolution.
Yeah, well, you just have to wait for your NAS to start to boot up again, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Untangle doesn't have that either. Well, something that I've never enabled it. I've never used it in like a highly available arrangement. And to be honest with you, yeah, does it really matter if you reboot a box and there's no DNS for like a minute, you know, on your home network?
It's a P1, mate. It's a P1.
And plus, Untangle's but cool.
Pi-hole is great.
Yeah, yeah, Pi-hole's great. So I'm working through that. It's not my DHCP server at the moment, so I'm not getting the auto DNS names at the moment. So I've had to go in and stick a bunch of DNS names in there. So I'll wait and see how we go with OpenSense or PFSense to see what I do with my DHCP.
How good are you with FreeBSD?
Yeah, not so good.
Yeah, that was the only issue I had when I was using OpenSense. I had a bit of a learning curve.
Right. I mean, I could hack together a firewall just with a Linux box. That's what I've done in the past. But yeah, I like my GUI, so I wanted to sort of do it all.
Yeah,
for me. So Untangle. I think it's going to be the end of an era for me. Once I went down the premium path and I enabled all those features, it was great, and I was happy to pay the $50 and get those features. But it's gone away now, so
no, it's sad.
Try something else, yeah.
Yeah, well, good thing that your entitification hasn't come to any large virtualization platforms.
No, no. You get onto that later, hey?
Yeah, indeed. Well, I've been on my own little tech adventures. I've got a new core switch for the home lab. Ubiquiti, you know, as you know, I built a lot of mounts for them, and they've got a new an 8-port switch plus 2 SFPs, but 10 gig all the way through, PoE +++ on all the Ethernet ports. That's going to be the backbone of my network. So I've had that come in. I haven't yet commissioned it because I've been in the middle of making mounts for it. But the other thing that I had my eye on a little while ago, which has now just come out for pre-order, is I've been wanting to get a new NAS and replace a couple of really old QNAP NASs, like really old QNAP NASs, which have been very reliable, but, very long in the tooth now. Mm-hmm. I had my, like, minis forum at CES announced, like, their N5 and N5 Pro NASs, and they've just gone up for pre-order. I'm like, for shipping at the end of this month. So I've got a 30% off discount code because I like put my hat in the ring early on for it. So I've got to make a decision this week. I think I'll be jumping on that. And then that way I'll have my new 10 gig NAS and I can plug it in my 10 gig switch. And
He's going 10 gig. Yeah,
all the way through.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I don't think I'm going to step up the 10 gig. I'm definitely looking at the 2.5. Because when NBN comes in here, that fiber to the premises, it will be 2.5. So
yeah,
I've got to start preparing for that.
Yeah, that's the that'll be the only issue that I've got, is that my current Ubiquiti router is just 1 gig on the WAN side. It isn't. It is 2.5 gig on the WAN side for some stupid reason, because the entire LAN, the LAN plane is only 1 gig. So technically, if I really wanted to update the firmware on my router, I could do it at 2.5 gig, but there's no possible way for me to get any of that speed downstream.
No.
But they do have a 10 gig one, the UCG fiber, which has come out recently. So that might be my next little upgrade.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, being in Melbourne, you might not have heard of this, but an ex-student from Western Sydney Uni was charged with cyber attacks. Police allege that a woman initially exploited the university system to secure unauthorized parking discounts on campus.
Well, hey, in terms of high crimes, that's I think we could understand, right?
And then one of the greatest.
I was going to say, one of the greatest things in life is trying to get free parking.
Oh, of course, yeah. But then she's moved on, done the Ferris Bueller thing and modified her student records, her academic records. And then, oh, I just moved on, did a little bit of blackmail. You know,
come on. I got a HD in computer science, though.
Well, you, the uni's taught her everything she knows. So, you know, that's a perfect target sitting there to hack.
Oh, yeah, no, that's... Like,
talk about stupid, really. Come on.
Yeah, and it looks like she was doing it for quite some time, right? Like, yeah. So she was a student... And then she continued to breach it after she left the uni, or
I believe that's what the story says. Yeah, a series of cyber attacks involving unauthorized access, data exploitation, system compromise, and misuse of university infrastructure since 2021. Yeah,
I like how in this article, this IT News article, you know, they've got this very helpful picture that was supplied by the New South Wales Police of, look at this rack-mounted gear, and it's just like, it's a rack that has like 2 1U pizza box, I don't know, what are they, Cisco servers?
I don't know
what that is. This gray box with just like a bunch of discs missing, and just sitting in the bottom of the rack, like ears on it, just
on a piece of foam.
Yeah, obviously it was a bit noisy. Obviously, yeah. This is the core of the hacking network.
That's
right.
Yeah, the core. That's probably the cheapest things you can find on eBay.
Oh man.
Anyway, I just thought that was a good one to throw in. If you've got nothing else.
That's all my fun stuff for now.
I've ranted enough as well. Let's get on with the community news. All right, without Ian here, I'm going to attempt to do the community news this week.
I'm sure you'll do a great job.
I hope I've got them all. So, kicking things off, we have on July 16, we've got the G2G Melbourne July Coding Night. That is going to be at the 452 Flinders Street, which is the Mantle Group office in Melbourne. Hack Night is now known as Coding Night. Let's get together and share what we are working on. So, check that one out. Link will be there in the show notes. And we also have on the 14th of July, also at the Mantle Group office, Offline First AI Web Apps and Deceiving Cyber Criminals with AI. Yeah, this is a talk by Ben Potter talking about deceiving cyber criminals with AI. I mean, it sounds fantastic. As cyber threats grow more advanced, so must our defenses. And he gets into using AI to defend yourself. And then finally, we have on July 18, Intro to Python for AI, Intro to Python with AI for Science. This is at G2G AI for Science at Adelaide. This course, it's aimed at research students and academics waiting to learn the fundamentals of Python and its AI capabilities. That sounds like a great event as well. That is going to be... course will be delivered virtually over Google Meet for 4 hours with plenty of breaks. It's on the 18th of July between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. So if you can get a few hours off work, or indeed if work supports you doing that, which, you know, Mantle Group absolutely does, but if you're in IT, I'm sure there's some time and budget should be set aside to allow you to learn stuff.
Sure. I mean, that one, it does say that you need to be working in a research-related field at an Australian institution.
Yes, that as well. So, yeah, go and check those out. Links in the show notes. How did I go?
Oh, you know, pretty good, actually. Pretty good. Yeah, I think Ian's going to listen in and he's going to be like, oh, mate.
Like when I listened to you guys. Yeah. No, you guys did a bang-up job. Awesome. All right, let's get on with the news items. And first news item this week, Google swipes Oracle alumni for Cloud CFO.
Poor Larry.
Poor Larry
needs Larry's a new CFO.
Larry's missing out. So we're looking at Oracle Finance Executive Kobe Barnathan took the role of CFO for Google Cloud effective this month. Now, I only like putting stories like this in because I can tag them in the LinkedIn post. You know that, right?
Hi, Kobe.
Hi, Kobe. Yeah. A five-year alumni of Oracle. Barnathan's most recently served as the software provider's CFO and SVP finance, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure. So he was doing that, but in the past, he's had 10 years at Microsoft. Serving in such roles as Finance Director, Microsoft Cloud Infrastructure and Google Finance Manager, Cloud Enterprise COGs, this is according to his LinkedIn. He also serves 7 years tenure in Intel as a Finance Manager and in roles of the company's Semiconductor Fabricators in Israel. So, yeah, he seems like a well-rounded guy.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's a good time for him to be coming across to Google. The got plenty of growth in the cloud space, so.
Absolutely. And stories we're going to get onto, it sounds like he's going to have his hands full because, yeah, there's some cash flowing backwards and forwards, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so we wish Kobe the best in his new role and, yeah, it's going to have a good time ahead of him. And while we're speaking of all things finance, Alphabet's comeback, the hidden engines powering Google. So this is an article on investing.com. And in this, we're talking about Alphabet has staged an impressive recovery in recent months, bouncing back more than 23% from its 52-week low in April and now down just 8% year-to-date.
I mean, in fairness, the market did take a bit of a hosing in April.
Yeah, no, it did. You're right.
Especially tech stocks. So, seeing them creep back to, you know, where they're well-deserved. I mean, Google is supreme. Well, Alphabet in general is supremely profitable at the moment. So,
yeah, no, it is looking good. The article goes on to say, Google services remain the financial engine behind Alphabet, encompassing products such as Google Search, YouTube, Android, Gmail, Maps, and Google Play. Now, you really have to wonder, all of those things, Google Search, free, YouTube, effectively free, Android, well, you could say it's a free operating system that they include with the phones that they sell, Gmail, free, Maps, free, Google Play, I haven't bought a lot of things on Google Play. How are these things the revenue, the heart of the revenue?
I mean, surely it's because it's not just going to be search. It's not money from people clicking search. It's from the ads that come alongside search.
Yes, you know? true. But not directly search, right? It's the ads that are served up by it. YouTube, you could argue the same thing as well. But the others, not so much.
I mean, the Play one, like, again, like yourself, I don't buy much through the Play Store. It's very rare. Maybe a couple of times a year do I ever buy anything through Play Store. But there's plenty of whales out there that just, you know, like mobile apps where they just churn tens of thousands of dollars in, I don't know, Candy Crush.
Yeah, Candy Crush is a big one.
Google getting 30% on that.
Yeah, true. It's the micropayments and microtransactions, isn't it, that's doing it?
Yeah.
And then the article does go on to talk about Google Cloud. Once considered Alphabet's laggard, interesting choice of words, Google Cloud is now rapidly gaining ground. In quarter one 2025, Google Cloud generated $12.26 billion in revenue, marking a 28% year-over-year increase. The previous two quarters saw 30% and 35% year-over-year.
I feel like that, you know, like that was a strange way for them to frame that, saying like as a laggard. Like, it's been profitable for a couple of years now. It took a lot of build-out time that they were going to lose money on. Like, you know, I think GCP's doing pretty good.
Doing pretty well. Laggard intentionally so, right? I mean, it's an intentional laggard because they had to spend money, invest money to, like, you know, catch up to the others effectively.
Yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly this whole AI thing's happened and everyone's like, oh, Google's pretty good at this AI thing.
Yeah.
yeah, it's because they've been doing it for a damn long time. And then you suddenly see this catch up in the last 2 years, right?
Yeah, yeah. I actually do, I mean, just thinking this through, right? Because so many, like, obviously Google services are running on Google Cloud infrastructure, like the same facilities, they're using all the same stuff. I wonder if how much of their, like, pre-GCP spend kind of just got moved over to that bucket. You know, the infrastructure, the data centers that they're having to build for their own stuff before they started selling it to other people.
Right.
You know, like those budgets would have just kind of come across as well, yeah?
Right, because they had to build their own stuff anyway.
Yeah, yeah, when it was all just a cost center.
Yeah, yeah. But now it's kind of like this mash of everything, right? Like they just build this core infrastructure and they can put their own stuff on it, they can put public cloud on it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right. That's it's a very interesting way to do it because normally in enterprise, you're right. You would have your external and your internal IT departments, right? Your enterprise departments, and then you, like what you sell, your external IT. Yeah. But no, in Google's infrastructure case, wise, it all kind of becomes one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure there are tools internally that are separate. I've heard that would be the case, but interesting arrangement.
But either way, money's
either way, looking
up
good, and
stock
then,
prices climbing back up too.
Yeah, dovetailing is that global cloud spending rises to $90.9 billion in the first quarter. Oh, it's eye-watering. Global spending on cloud infrastructure services reaches $90.9 billion in the first quarter of 2025, according to estimates by industrial analyst Canalys. The company reported that this represents 21% increase compared to the same period in 2024. That's heating up.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, this article, because it sort of goes into what they were seeing about, like, some people starting to pull back a little bit from cloud and doing a bit more on-prem stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then this rush to embrace AI has pushed things back to the cloud again.
Yep. Because you're not hosting, like, your Grace Hoppers in your own data center, you know, training or this is just too much, right? It's too much power.
It's
too much.
Yeah.
You can't, if you can even get them, right, to start with.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Or if you want to use TPUs, right? Like, you're not having them on-prem.
You're not having them. No. That's it. You got to use it in cloud.
Yep.
Collectively, the three hyperscales recorded 24% year-on-year increase in cloud-related spending. No doubt driven by AI. And out of all of that, Amazon has maintained its position in the market leader in the first quarter of 2025, capturing 32% of global market share and recording a 17% year-on-year increase in revenue. And finally, this article finishes off with Google Cloud, the world's third largest cloud provider, well, we know who the first two are, maintained a 10% market share in the first quarter, delivering strong year-on-year growth of 31%. So I think we've discussed this before, we're growing faster than the other clouds. We're not as big, but we're growing faster.
Yeah, it certainly seems. I mean, not just Google. Google is capacity constrained, but it looks like Amazon and stuff as well is, like, they've struggled a bit with their growth. They've got some higher revenue targets, but they just don't have the infrastructure to be able to actually, you know, sell to customers. Mm. So hence all these builds, right? Like, they're just trying to keep in front of it.
Yeah, yeah. Just trying to keep the nose above water.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, yeah. So go and read those two articles there if you want to find out the position of everyone in the market at the moment. But Google Cloud, it's a great environment to be in. It's great technology. If you've not worked with it before, then give it a go. But Broadcom, on the other hand, I don't know what's going on with Broadcom.
I like this one. I like this article, right? So it's not them, it's you. You're using
VCF wrong.
You're using it wrong. You're holding it wrong, right? We're not expensive. You're just not using enough of it. Right? So you're the problem, listener.
You've got all these bits and pieces of different things. Just use our stuff. You'll be fine.
Yeah. I know you only wanted to pay for vSphere and, you know, you wanted to have two nodes and that's all you wanted. But now you've got vSAN. Now you've got vRealize Automation. You'll have it whether you wanted it or not. Now you've got NSX. You have to have it.
So, yes, Broadcom's answer to VMware pricing outrage. You're using it wrong. Customers dismayed by Broadcom's moves at selling costly bundles will realize its value if they just use more of its components, the company's CTO says.
I tell you what, there's some quotes in this article, which I find to be a little bit ominous, right?
Yeah, right.
All right. So, I like this one, right? So, talking about like people complaining about the cost and they're going to migrate to different things. allow me to quote from Broadcom's EMA CTO Joe Bagley. A lot of these stories around cost don't play out when we actually get to sit down with the customer and talk to them about their situation, what they need, and what we're going to do with them.
Like the customer's like a thorn in your side that you have to do something with them.
It's a naughty child. Like, yeah. You're using another orchestration platform. How dare you use vRealize? I think it's called now, but you know.
Yeah, you're spending all this money on other software. Don't bother with that. Just use our software.
Yeah, get deeper into our ecosystem. Yeah. Right? And that's the gambit for Broadcom, right? Is we want you deep in the vSphere or VCF stack. Right? We want you using all of our tools. Because once you're in, you're not going to want to pull it all apart. So yeah, that's their gambit. And however, it seems to be paying off for them. They're like surprised to me, but they're saying that 87% of people who have renewed with them have renewed because they're going to go deeper into VCF.
Right. Yeah. Not because their arm is twisted behind their back and they have to.
I think things can be two things.
Yeah, things can be two things, exactly.
So, it's certainly interesting. Hey, I'm not Broadcom. I wasn't in charge of their purchase. We'll see how things go long term and shitification wise, but they're certainly making money hand over fist for this quarter.
Yeah, seems to be working out for them so far. But some funny quotes in this article. Go and check it out. I mean, it smacks of hubris. I mean, I just, you know, it's like, guys, you're just making these wild assumptions, and it's like, of course you should be. It's just hubris. It's just hubris. That's how it seems to me.
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly seen this over the years, right? Like, you know, no one ever got fired for buying IBM, and now it's rare to see IBM gear, you know, that's not a mainframe. You know, same goes with Cisco, right? Like, it was always like, well, if you need switching, Cisco was kind of your default. Yeah. And now, you know, amazingly, NVIDIA is one of the largest, the Ethernet vendors, NVIDIA, the graphics card company.
Yeah. How did that happen? Like,
so, you know, maybe, you know, 5-10 years from now, maybe we're like, oh man, I touched a VMware environment the other day. I'm like, oh really? People are still using that. We'll see. We'll see.
See how it plays out. Yep. Proxmox can take over the world. It'd be great.
Yeah.
Proxmox I'm still happy with. They haven't inshitified that. There's still a free version available.
Oh, I am sure that there is some private equity firms sniffing around being like, how can we get a little slice of Proxmox? How can we push people up to, you know, Proxmox Enterprise?
You can bet they've been talking.
Yep.
All right. Well,
anyway, hold your VCF environments properly and you'll get more value out of them.
Yep. Get the value. It's Google Pixel going to get banned. Well, in Japan anyway, not everywhere.
Are you planning on going to Japan?
I am going to Japan in, I'm going to Okinawa via Japan in August.
Better leave your phone at home.
Well, I kind of need my phone, so I will be taking it. They'll be banned from sale. Now, this is interesting because this is an article on notebookcheck.net. Google Pixel 7 gets sales ban in Japan. So it's a sales ban. So there'll still be grey imports. They'll still be hanging around. People still own them. So what's going on here? Smartphones from the Pixel 7 series have been banned from retail sales there due to a patent dispute with South Korean mobile phone company Pantech. A district court in Tokyo has ruled that Google has infringed a standard essential patent relating to the LTE modem in the Pixel smartphones. Such patents are required for manufacturing products, which is why they must license it. So they have
it. So it's a South Korean company, but they've bought the lawsuit in Japan against Google.
Because the court has stressed the preliminary injunctions for standard essentials are only possible if the defendant has not attempted to obtain a license. So they didn't obtain the license in Japan. I think that's the problem. Google's
right.
They haven't got this license in Japan. Now, the court gave them the opportunity. Google also refused to propose a reasonable royalty rate during the proceedings, claiming that calculating it would be too complex. So they can just feed the numbers into Gemini and it could work it out, right? After Google refused to provide the court with data on the sales figures of the Pixel smartphone in Japan, the sales ban on the Pixel 7 was banned.
Very interesting. Why would it be difficult for them to say how many Pixel 7s they sold?
I don't know. That seems very odd, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you don't tend to get a good result in court if you're not wanting to play ball with the court.
Yeah, and bring the evidence that the court requires. Exactly.
Yeah.
This is what happens. You get banned. I would assume that any future Pixel phones that include that LTE modem would be subject to the same ban.
You would expect so. We got the 10 due out in August.
Yeah,
Japan.
Yeah. But don't I know that like the iPhones, for instance, don't they just sort of go down to the flea market in China and just buy like whatever the cheapest LTE modem at the time is, and they order like 500,000 of them and build the next batch with that device? That's why you end up with so many different models in the same like iPhone that's got different modems and different radios.
I mean, a lot of them are built into the silicon. I don't know if Apple has built the LTE modems into their chips yet.
Right.
There was some work because obviously the more that you can get onto the one chip, the power consumption goes down and your cost, your bill of materials goes down.
But when you start talking LTE and communication protocols, then you're starting to going into IP, it gets difficult to like separate that out, right? And this is the problem I think they've befouled to.
Well, keep an eye on that one and
I'll let you know how my Pixel 9 Pro goes when I'm over there.
Yep.
At least they haven't blocked it from the network, it'll be fine. Yes.
Not going to end up in a situation. Remember when there was the Galaxy Notes that were exploding, the Samsung phones, and you know, like those things like you can't have them on planes.
Yep. No, keeping well away from the Samsung stuff. All right, enough of banned phones. Let's get on with some security news. What have we got here? AWS cloud storage. Oh, yeah, this is, boy, oh, boy. Cloud storage buckets leaking secrets data despite security improvements. Why is this still a problem?
I mean, it's just where all the secret data goes, right? It's always in an open bucket.
A publicly accessible bucket. What is going on? Now, I did really like this article because it gave me a new term. The concept of triple threat cloud instances. Now, I'd not heard this term used before, but the idea is... Or that's also referred to as toxic cloud trilogies, instances that are A, publicly exposed, B, contain critical vulnerabilities, and C, contain highly privileged data. That's your triple threat. And yeah, yes, yeah, there are VM instances and services out there that are like that.
What they found is for a bunch of environments, they were able to get the environment variables from these publicly available Google Cloud Run instances. And then in those environment variables are going to be things like API keys.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because I need my Cloud Run instance to be able to talk to something important. Like, yep. Well, I can just dump out the end variables and now I know where I need to go.
Yep, and stuff's been fuzzed all the time for these kind of things. My wife's website, I mean, it's just a WordPress instance, but... she suddenly had a spate of like 404s across a whole bunch of files. She's like, oh, the traffic's really gone up. They're all 404 errors. What does that mean? Well, it sounds like someone's fuzzing your website looking for open stuff.
Yeah.
You know, this is going on all the time.
Better patch your WordPress.
Patch your WordPress, yeah, although it updates itself these days. But, yeah, keep that thing updated. And the article does go on to say nearly 1 in 10 publicly accessible cloud storage buckets contain sensitive data. Publicly accessible. That's 10%. That's flabbergasting. With virtually all of that data considered confidential or restricted.
I suppose the problem is that even if you create a bucket that when it's created, you're like, this is going to be publicly accessible. It's like for a reason. Some purpose you need it for. There's nothing stopping someone else down the line going like, oh, great, there's a bucket we can use. I'll just drop my file into it and then I'll use it for this other purpose. I'm going to use the same bucket for two different things. But it was never said, it was never designed to be used for, you know, PII. But the path of least resistance for the second person is I can use this. I'll just drop it in.
Yeah, but I don't get it. Like, people should be handling PII, you know, much better. They should be handling it, you know, with more sensitivity than that. Just don't put data in a bucket unless you know what the status of it is. Is it public or not? Really, come on, guys.
And I mean, and they're private by default, right? You have now when you create a bucket, you have to turn it public.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And when you turn it public, it brings up a big scary game to say, are you sure you want to make this public?
Yeah. Be aware.
Yeah. To give you some numbers, Amazon Web Services hosted more sensitive data, 16.7% of its buckets than Google Cloud Platform, which is 6.5%, and Azure, which is 3.2%. Researchers found sensitive information in 54% of AWS's Elastic Container Service. And 52% of Google Cloud Run environment variables. Yeah. Overall, 3.5% of Amazon's EC2 instances contain secrets in user data. I mean, it's a lot. When you consider how many buckets are, it's a lot. There's a lot of secret data out there that's just exposed. Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Oh, and we didn't even mention the Qantas hack that just happened last night.
Oh, yeah. We talked about it separately.
Yeah. This is why, right? Because of things like this. 6 million user accounts and details.
Yeah, I haven't actually looked, because I did get the email from Qantas about that one, but I haven't actually looked to see how impacted I am. Like,
so, yeah, best bet is, like, just start with, do I need a bucket? Start there. Do I need to put this information on the web where it can be posted, you know, accessed, right? Start there. If you don't need to, then don't, right? If you need to, make it private and handle it appropriately. End rant.
Cheers too.
All right then. Well, with that rant out of the way, let's get on with the AI Wars.
AI Wars.
We only have one deep voice today.
Sorry about that.
AI Wars. Now, there's some cool stuff coming out with Gemini. And Dave, you were aspiring the advantages of this thing. You love this thing.
Yeah, I do. Okay, so what I like is that now Gemini has been squeezed into a function in Sheets now.
Oh, so good.
Right? So now in Google Sheets, you can do, you know, go into a cell and you can go equals AI.
Right? So function. Not equals sum. Yes.
Right? Equals AI. And then in your brackets, you can be like, write a formal ad copy for the product. Grab the details from columns A2 through C2. Right. And that's, and it'll do that. It'll fill the cell. And then, you know, if you've got a list of things, and it can go and do the same work for you. You don't have to make, you know, 200 requests to go and build out any of this. You can just input the cell content straight into it. So cool.
So cool. And I assume you can effectively write any AI function to do anything in your sheet.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Like, summarize the data between these two things, or read the customer complaints in these columns and summarize for, you know, intent.
Yeah, or sentiment. Yeah.
Sentiment, sorry, yeah. Yes. So, yeah, it's very, very easy to use.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Squeezed into a function in Sheets. Yeah.
You know, look at this bank statement and see how much KFC I have been buying. Too much.
Actually, that's a cool idea. You could dump your your bank statement, your bank transactions for the year, and just extract, give it rules around what you want to extract, and then tally that up. You know, yeah, work-related expenses. Bang, there you go.
Bang. Yeah, classify it. Classify it by fast food and then estimate calories consumed.
How much fast food have I eaten in the last 12 months?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, very, very easy to use.
And along a similar vein is Gemini CLI as well. Gemini is squeezed into a command line argument now. You can just type Gemini and do a prompt right in the CLI.
And now, you've been using this a bunch, yeah?
I have been using this a bunch. This is awesome. And I sent you guys a little example there of what you can do. You can do Gemini-P and then put your prompt in quotes and effectively replace any command line tool, because you just tell it in the prompt, oh, give me this plus this, or that times that, or take this file and do this function, do this process on this file and output this file. You just tell it in plain text what you want, and it actions on it in the command line on the files in your file system.
Yeah, I mean, like I said in the chat, like, you know, it can do sed for you. Right, I could never write a sed command off the top of my head. Right,
yeah,
right. It's like mentally doing regex. It's just
yeah. Well, there's another good one. It could do regular expressions for you, right?
Yep.
Yep. For the handful of people that actually understand regular expressions.
You have to have one of those beautiful minds to do regular ones.
Exactly. No longer needed. You can just tell it, extract the blah, 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 and convert it to the blah, 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 and leave the whatever, whatever.
And you can use it done. For, like any, as you said, like any command on your computer, right? So you could be like, you're on a Mac. You could ask it to install things for you with Brew. You could change Tmux settings.
I was getting lazy and I needed to set up some, I was on a Mac. I sort of didn't know how to, I'm not as confident navigating around the file system on a Mac. And I just said to Gemini, add such and such to my shell path. And while you're there, add this and that and the other, and did it in one prompt, press enter. It went away, blah, 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 did it. And bang, it was just done for me. I couldn't tell you what files it edited or how it did it. It just did it. I had my shell set up how I wanted it.
Brilliant.
Brilliant, yeah.
Love it.
I also used it. I had a bunch of Terraform files and some Bazel files in there, and I wanted to just check that I had all the Bazel visibility set up properly for those Terraform files. And I said, from this subdirectory down, just scan for the Bazels on Terraform files, check that it's all set up properly. Bang, went away, checked it all. Give me a little report back and said, oh, it looks okay, except these files have got some funny entries. Went and checked it. Sure enough, found some problems and I fixed it. So, yeah, really, really cool tool. I'm going to use this a lot. Now, you get it, if you install it, you get Gemini 2.5 Pro for free, which will give you a 1 million context window, which you kind of need if you're using large sets of files and things. Which will give you 60 model requests per minute and 1,000 requests per day at no charge.
It's pretty good. It's pretty generous.
Pretty generous, yep. Yep. And if you're just running a small script, 60 model requests per minute, I mean, that's one a second. You're really not going to be doing more than that. Yeah, fantastic, cool tool. Go and check it out. There's an interactive mode. If you just run Gemini, it brings it up as interactive mode, but there's a bunch of command line options. You can just run it on the CLI. You can pipe things into it, pipe things out of it, redirect stuff, just like any other normal command you would.
Awesome.
Very, very cool. It's my new go-to. I mean, I'll tell you what, in the last, like, maybe month or two, my entire workflow has pivoted. Like I am the tiniest thing now, I'm using Gemini 2.5 Pro to do it. I'm not writing descriptions for cards anymore. I'm not writing PR descriptions. Even like responses to emails and things, bang, I'm straight there and it's doing the work for me. The whole cognitive offload thing, it's happening now. It's
locked in.
Locked in. It's a game changer. It really is. And I can see now why you get these doom mongers saying, oh, in 18 months' time, all white collar jobs are going to be eliminated. That to some degree it will be, but it's going to pivot, right? It's going to shift, right?
Yeah.
I heard an interesting comment the other day. The same way the Industrial Revolution offloaded physical labor, the AI revolution is offloading mental labor. Right. So where the Industrial Revolution, everyone had the same fears. Oh, it's going to do everyone out of a job. No one's going to be employed. But you needed then people to maintain those machines. So it kind of just shifted.
Yep.
Right. And yet there are still people that do manual work, even though we've got these machines, because there's always going to be some necessity for that. It just shifted a little bit. Same thing's going to happen here, right? If you're not using AI in your work now, you should be, right? Should be getting ahead of that game. And it'll allow you to do more with less, and it'll help you offload that cognitive load. And think there's about to be a massive shift. But I don't think there'll be people done out of jobs. It'll just shift.
Yeah. Still, I mean, it is a, it's definitely a very dynamic time. So, you know, you want to be across these tools, because even if you don't like them personally, like you are going to need to know them. It's like not knowing how to use a computer 30 years ago, not knowing how to use the internet 20 years ago. Like, you're going to have to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the way things are done now. Like, it's like driving a car, right? I mean, there are people that don't drive, right? Now, obviously, that's if your lifestyle supports that and you're in a city where you don't need to drive, then that's fine. But the vast majority of the population drives because it's a necessity. You have to learn to drive, right? If you want to use a computer, you've got to learn how to use AI, and you have to be using AI. That's where we're getting to now. And speaking of that, Microsoft is struggling to sell Copilot to its corporations.
Yeah, you have to use AI, but you don't have to use Copilot.
Yeah. Microsoft saying you must use Copilot in your work. They're mandating it, but their employees are saying, "Nah, I'd rather use ChatGPT."
Yeah, and same goes for, like, it's not just Microsoft employees, right? That's just people are very comfortable with what they know. Obviously, you know, given that we're in the Google kind of ecosystem, we all like using Gemini.
Yeah.
But ChatGPT has the brand recognition.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're just a mum and pop, computer user, then ChatGPT, right? I mean, my wife and I still talk about it, and I put it into ChatGPT, but she really knows when I say that secretly that she better be using Gemini or I'm going to come in and there's going to be, there'll be hell to pay.
Right. So,
And I walk past the office and I look in and go, "Is that ChatGPT window? You better close that. You better be using Gemini."
Oh, man. So it's like, what is it? Like, all AIs are ChatGPT, but not ChatGPT isn't all AIs? I'm trying to
think that. Something like that. Yeah. Microsoft is trying to push its AI chatbot Copilot, but it's hitting roadblocks. Copilot is struggling against rival ChatGPT. ChatGPT launched much earlier, giving a model a head start. And that's it. It's the brand name right now. It's like the iPod or the iPhone, right? That's the brand. It's like doing a Google, right? When you say, "Oh, I'm going to Google it," you mean search the internet.
Yeah, I Google it on DuckDuckGo.
I do Google it on DuckDuckGo. That's it. So that's the term that's in the vernacular now, ChatGPT. Everyone knows what you're talking about when you say ChatGPT. When I say, I'll go and look it up in Gemini, it's like, "Whoa, what are you talking about? What's this Gemini thing?"
Yeah. And look at you like you said you were going to use Bing.
Oh, I'll just Bing it. So... All things AI. Also, if you haven't hooked up Clone in your VS Code, go and do that. Get yourself an API key for Gemini and hook up Clone. It does some amazing things as well with your code. It can change code and search for problems, and yeah, that's incredible as well. Yeah, well, I don't know. What do you reckon? That could be about it, Dave.
I reckon that's a show, mate.
That's a show, yeah. Well, I think we've gone on enough. We've talked about AI and models and all the rest of it too much today. But go and check those things out. All those GDG things too, they're really good. I think I did a good enough job without Ian being here. if you're using VMware, make sure you use the entire package because that's how you get your value.
It's the only way.
Anyway, all right, don't forget, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Go to Apple Podcasts, write us a review to really help the show out. And while you're there, go to YouTube, start the discussion, smash that like button. You can contact the show, contact@gcpbytes.com.au. Find us on the web, www.gcpbytes.com.au. And today's show was Hivetech Solutions and Mantle Group. Well, that's about it from me. I guess you don't have anything else to add, Dave?
I do not. No, just into another busy day.
Yeah, all right. We'll go and enjoy that 3D fabbing of yours. We'll talk later. All right, bye. All right,
bye.
Let's see how we go without Ian, eh?
Ah. Be like the old times.
Yeah, oh, that's right, the old times. We, yeah. Were you the second or third?
Second.
You were the second after Ida. Yeah.
After Ida, yeah.
Yes, it was the co-host curse. All the co-hosts left and quit.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're still there.
Well, I wasn't the co-host, so...
That's what I mean. Like, yeah, it's only affects co-hosts.
Yeah. It's funny. All right. At least I got an outtake now. It's good.